Hey, Campfire crew, my name's Rick, and I am one half of a husband and wife team that resells liquidation products on eBay and other online sales platforms. We call ourselves the Bin Hunters. We just started a YouTube channel, and we'd love for you to go over to our channel, check out a video or two, give us a comment, maybe a thumbs up, maybe you'll subscribe, maybe you'll even click the notification bell. We'd love to have you join the Bin Hunters family, but for now, back to you, Uncle Josh.
Hey, Campfire crew, let's get it on. The Apricot Trees, submitted by Anonymous. I had just had a C-section and was holding my newborn baby when I noticed a man pull into my driveway. This is not unusual, as our house is the first one on the street right off the highway. It's a dead-end street, and we get probably 10 or more people every day using our driveway to turn around and get back onto the highway. This man was probably in his early 80s. He parked, got out of his truck, and walked up to our door. It was unlocked since a neighbor had just stopped by, and I assumed this man was just a neighbor we hadn't met yet. That was until he turned the handle and started to walk in. I was startled and couldn't get up very fast since I was only a day out of the hospital. But I did get up, and I stopped him from walking into my house. And he asked, "Are those your apricot trees?" and pointed to my neighbor's trees, which were extremely obviously not in our yard. No, that's our neighbor Julie's trees. Why?" He replied, "Oh, I really need apricots because I'm trying to make some jam." He noticed my 5-year-old daughter and my 3-year-old son and said to them, "Come help me pick some apricots. I'll give you some money. Do you have any teenage boys that can help?" I was pissed that he even asked, and I called another neighbor to ask if she would come up and talk to me about the trees. This was really so she could just help me get them off my property if push came to shove. She's usually packing. By this point, he saw her 4-year-old son, who was running up the hill a lot faster than his mom, and he said, "Come on, kids, I have some candy." My kids excitedly ran outside, mostly because they saw the neighbor's son, and I tried to follow as fast as I could, but the kids were out the door really fast. I went outside and heard my neighbor yelling, "Do not take his candy! Stay away from that man!" With that, she yanked her son away from the man, who had started getting candy out of his center console and handing it to the kids. Her son had a piece of candy, and she ripped it out of his hand and threw it into the street. "Look, you need to leave. If you want apricots so goddamn bad, go to the grocery store like a normal person. Now get the hell out of here." She yelled that while ushering all of the kids back into my house. Seconds later, he peeled out and drove off. He didn't have a license plate on the front, and he took off so fast I couldn't see the back one. We called the police, but there wasn't much they could do since we only had a vague description of him and his car. But did he seriously just try to kidnap our kids? 3 years later, I still don't understand what the hell that man was thinking, why he came to my house when the trees obviously weren't mine, and why he wanted to know if I had teenage boys in my house. Creepiest old man ever. I should have called the police first, but I honestly thought it was just another neighbor. I haven't seen him since, and I'm definitely okay with that. The Stories from the Store, submitted by Holly. My family has owned a convenience store that is located, for lack of a better description, in the middle of nowhere. It's the place you stop between different cities for usually a desperately needed bathroom break and a tank of gas. We're not far from a small town with fast food restaurants, but we are the first stop going one way and the last stop going another. The store is also located on a crossroads where there's a lot of traffic, and consequently, that also leads to a lot of traffic accidents. To give you an idea of what the store looks like, I really need to. It's not exactly your typical gas station. When you enter the store, the cash register sits in the middle and a little to your right. The convenience store portion is on the left, and the far, far left wall has a cooler that's filled with cold drinks like you would see in any normal gas station. The snacks, hot coffee and cappuccino, are in horizontal rows in front of the cooler. And also, when you immediately walk in, you can see the ice cream freezers against the front wall. On the right, there's the local merchandise in the same horizontal rows as on the left. If you continue walking down the middle of the store, you'll find a large open restaurant on the left and, on the right, a small candy shop. The entire right part of the store had rows of local products like jams, olives, syrup, you name it. It's probably somewhere on that shelf if you needed to find it. If you go down around the fifth row toward the right wall, there are swinging kitchen doors that you might see in a 50s restaurant, and we call that the back. We keep everything out there that we fill with the right side of the store on shelves or in a large industrial freezer back there. The back is a large room that's shaped like a rectangle. It has shelves lining the walls to your right when you walk in. And to your left, the middle portion has tables against the right wall to prep the merchandise. And in front of you when you walk in, there's lockers for the employees to keep their stuff. On the left end of that rectangle, there's also a wall-to-wall freezer with a large sliding door. The last part of the layout that I want to tell you, because it's important, is the boss's office. It has a little window where the local workers cash checks, and to the right of that are the restrooms. Gosh, I know this is a lot, but I hope you have a pretty good idea of how the place looks. I started working there when I was pretty young, and would only work during the summer months from June to late August. I did so from my sophomore year in high school to when I was a freshman in college, and I would spend most of my time in the back. I was preparing merchandise because my dad thought I was particularly fast. When I was in the back prepping some of the items on the tables, empty boxes would fall off the shelves off to my left. I would go over and put things back, thinking that maybe somebody had made the shelf against the wall on the other side shake. But when I put things back on the shelves, just sure that they wouldn't slide off, but not 5 steps back to my workbox, they would fall again. It got to the point where I would just put the boxes on the ground, deciding that, hey, these boxes don't want to be on a shelf. My dad would come in later, put the boxes on the shelves, and they wouldn't fall. Another time when I was back there, I was there for a good portion of the day, and I was getting ready to take my lunch break. I turned, and I swear, there was this shadow leaning up against the shelves where the boxes had fallen before. I could see where the figure had left his left foot crossed over his right, and its arms were crossed over its chest. I mean, it scared me so bad. I was so afraid, I ran right out of there at full sprint. I saw that shadow other summers throughout the times that I worked there. But that first time, I was beyond terrified. The shadow would always catch me in moods where I was prepared to throttle somebody. Like, I would just holler out, "Go away!" And it would. I mean, no heaviness in the air, no creepy shadow. I later found out that this shadow scared the living daylights out of several other employees. I guess it's almost like a rite of passage at this point, to see someone leaning against the shelves in shadow form. Every once in a while, my dad would tell me that one of the employees would come up front and stand right next to him and not leave his side for a good hour or so, and no matter how many times he asked if they were okay, they insisted they were fine. One time, there was a group of ladies working in the back to get a huge shipment out onto the shelves as quickly as they could. They were just talking and listening to music, when suddenly, their music turned off. The one who was playing the music off their phone began to fiddle with it, thinking the phone was being finicky. I mean, everybody didn't think anything of it and just continued their work. But then, every door to the lockers behind them slammed shut. Mind you, these are those old-time metal lockers that squeak when you even move a door. For that reason, every door is usually kept shut, but every door managed to swing open without anyone hearing, and in that sudden silence, with just the sounds of work happening, the doors slammed shut. The ladies yelled, and my dad came rushing back there, thinking someone had tried to break inside, but all he found was a bunch of girls that were really upset. When my dad told me this story, he concluded with, "Huh, I guess it didn't like the music they were playing." I mean, we'd all played music at one point or another, but for whatever reason, it didn't like that song. Something else that happened to myself was when I would get off of work when the stores closed, I would wait for my dad to finish so we could head home. I usually waited in the office. The office consisted of two rooms, the one with the window I already mentioned, and the one with the computers and the door. In the room with the window, they had hung a semi-transparent black curtain, and a comfortable chair was also in there, so I usually just made myself at home, played a game on my phone, and waited for my dad to complete his tasks. I always asked if he wanted help, but he always said it was faster if he just did it by himself. About halfway through my first summer of working there, I was sitting in the chair when I saw the curtain move. I mean, it never moved unless someone ran into it. And it caught my attention, so I looked up and saw someone with a green shirt walking by. Being the person that I am, my first thought was to wonder what jackass didn't hear that we were closing. I mean, we always yelled it through both echoey bathrooms every night. I went out into the store, and there was no one there. My dad was walking towards me, though, and I couldn't see his face because it was dark. When he got to me, he looked confused. "What were you doing?" he asked. I thought I saw someone walk by, and I kind of trailed off and pointed at the window. I was wondering if a brush of air would have actually made the curtain move, because surely my dad would have seen anybody else out there if they had walked by. My dad asked me to stay where I was, and then he checked every room in the store. I told him I would check the bathrooms, and I did, but not a soul was in that entire store. If I hadn't seen the color of the person's shirt, I wouldn't be so convinced that I saw anyone. My dad just shook his head and said, "Well, I'm ready to go home, are you?" I nodded and we left. Later, the same thing happened with the curtain. I think it was another time in that summer. But I didn't leave the office, having convinced myself it was just a breeze from the air conditioning, even though we shut the air conditioning off right at closing. My dad later admitted that he often saw people walking past the window, but he always thought it was just his eyes playing tricks on him. Our schedule changed frequently, and one morning we were out there getting ready to open, probably 10 till 6, because Dad always opened a little bit earlier. I got to the front, and I was waiting for my dad to bring the till to the cash register. He started with a restaurant and candy shop, and it usually took him a few cycles around the store to finish with all the tills. I was waiting for the opening money before we could open the doors, and my dad flicked on the lights, and I saw that there was this old truck in the parking lot. I could see from where I was standing that there was no one in the truck, but I remembered that we had this one frequent customer that my dad knew. He would always come in with one of his old trucks, and my dad always told me that he had a couple of them. I was expecting my dad's friend, and was a little surprised, though, when this tall cowboy walked in. He looked to be pushing 70, and had his long hair pushed back by a white straw Stetson, which I remembered because my grandfather had one just like it. He looked at me with a slight smile and said, "Morning, little lady. It's nice to see you this fine morning." His voice had a very thick southern accent, which wasn't too weird considering we got a lot of travelers. But usually, I would expect people to be traveling this early to be a trucker or traveling with somebody else. It just seemed strange that he was alone. I smiled back and said, "Good morning. How are you today?" "I'm doing fine. I'm looking for coffee," he said. And I pointed to the coffee maker, which my dad had just fixed that morning. He strolled over at his leisure and got his coffee. Most people that came to our store, especially the older folks, generally preferred to have some small talk, otherwise the cashier can seem a bit standoffish. So I looked for something to talk about. "So, how is this fine morning going for you?" he asked as he stirred sugar into his coffee. And I remember thinking, "Wow, he just put a lot of sugar in there." "It's going good," I replied. "Just opening up. You might actually have to wait because I don't have the till up here yet." Then I was very aware that my dad was standing a few feet to my right where the entrance to the cashier was. He was holding the till, and he looked concerned. "Who are you talking to?" he asked me. I pointed at where the old man was standing, but when I turned, there was no one there. When I looked out into the parking lot, there was nothing, no one, nothing in sight. Now, everyone knows that those old trucks are not exactly quiet, and I highly doubt that this older gentleman could have bolted out the door, gotten into his truck before I turned my head. Not to mention, my dad would have seen him. The next few stories I wanted to share are mainly my dad's, and he's worked at the store for a lot longer than me, but he's the one who's had weirder experiences. The first happened when my dad closed the store one night. He was completely alone and was headed back toward the office when he heard a baby cry in the bathroom. My dad knew it was in the bathroom because the store doesn't really echo, but the bathroom itself is very echoey, and this cry to him was echoing. My dad said that his first thought was, what asshole left their baby in the damn bathroom? And he went into the first women's restroom, but it was empty. So then he went into the men's restroom, and it was empty. My dad said he got so scared he wasn't going to find the crying baby, so he searched every inch of the floor for that baby. But when he came out of the back after looking in the freezer and everywhere else, the crying had stopped. My dad later talked to his employees about this, and they all exchanged looks. Apparently, each one of them had had a similar experience around closing time, when they would hear a baby crying in the bathroom. There was never a baby in that bathroom. Another story happened not only to my dad, but several employees and one customer. It was near closing time, and there was a customer whom one of our employees was ringing up. My dad was messing with this thing we keep the coins in, and it takes forever. But he was crouching a little behind the employee. Parallel to the register, there was another manager, and I'll call him Danny. He was just sweeping up. There was also another employee, and I'll call her Kate, and she was just putting stock on the shelves, almost right next to Danny. My dad said he was aware that a customer was walking across the middle aisle in front of him, presumably heading to the register. But when he raised his head to look at her, so did Danny, so did Kate, and so did the customer. They all saw a woman, and they were all watching her as she took a few steps towards the register and then disappeared. My dad looked at Danny and Kate, who he was now with, and was sure that he had seen from their expressions that they were looking at the same thing. Then he turned around and saw the expression on the customer's face. That poor customer. My dad, when he told me the story, said, she looked like she'd seen a ghost. Every one of them had seen this lady heading towards the cash register, and all of them had seen her disappear. The last story I have happened to my dad when I was around 13. I had already spent most of a whole summer working there, about a year and a half after the first incident. My dad was closing up the office, and he was in the middle of counting money to balance the tills for the following day, when he heard clear as day someone whisper, I see you. He could feel the breath of their last words settle on the back of his neck. Naturally, my dad whipped around, but there was no one in the office. He searched the next room over that I mentioned, and he looked up the center aisle. There was no one. My dad called my mom, convinced someone was in the store, and searched every room with her on the phone so someone would be able to call the police should he be attacked. He even looked out back, but there wasn't a soul on the flat land for as far as my dad could see. Fortunately, we have cameras all over the store, so my dad hung up with my mom. He pulled out the cameras thinking he was going to see this person and catch them wherever they were hiding. He turned on the camera, saw himself whip around, but just as before, there was no one there. He went back to earlier before they had turned out the lights, and still there was not a soul in the store. My dad searched all the comings and goings of the office that day. There was no one unfamiliar, that no one but my dad had come in that night. So I put it to you, is my family store haunted? I know that the store is literally out in the middle of nowhere, and there have been a lot of deaths on that road. I mean, some of them including entire families, sadly. I don't know, but I do know that all too often, that gas station might be someone's last stop.
The Sound and Trophy, submitted by Michaela P. This was last year, and I haven't gotten over it. I'm just 11 years old, and I was 10 when this happened, and all of it's true. I had two friends over, Callie and Dean, and we were playing a game of hide-and-seek, and I don't play anymore because of this. The rules were you couldn't go in the attic, you couldn't go outside, and you couldn't go into my parents' room. Me, Callie, and Dean, we're still friends, and we talk about this a lot. But we were playing, and I heard something drop in my parents' room, and I yelled out, "All right, who's up there? Callie, I swear to God, you better be praying." Again, like I said, that was one of our only rules. Don't go in my parents' room. So I walked in, and there was nobody there. I mean, the sound was like a heavy drop, like a body was falling onto the floor or something. I looked around, and I saw it, and I screamed and ran out, and Callie ran after me, but Dee didn't hear it. So I ran back in, and what I found was a shadow holding the pistol my dad keeps hidden away. This thing looked at me, and that's when I screamed and ran. When my parents got home, they saw the gun laying out on the floor, and they looked at me dead in the eyes and said, "You didn't do this, do you?" I broke down, crying my eyes out. I basically died right there and then. I mean, I lost trust from my family and even one of my girlfriends. And I know I'm a little girl. She didn't believe me when we broke up right after the move. Now I'm in a new house with a new relationship. But I still have nightmares of that creepy-ass smile that fucking shape gave me. I hope I never see that shadow again. You better pray that I don't have something to beat his ass with. That's the end of my story.
Some spooky stuff, submitted by Dead Elmo. First off, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and have always wanted to share this story with anyone, because no one else besides myself, my brother, our cousin, not even our parents or anyone else on this fucking earth knows. This is the story of how I, who I'll call myself Ro, and my brother, who I'll call Rick, and my cousin, who I'll call Jim, witnessed a murder in the woods by what we think maybe were serial killers. The year was 1999, and this happened in a small town in Idaho. I remember it being 1999 because Blink-182's new album had just been released, and that was the thing to listen to. If you didn't then, you were considered kind of a soft cock. I don't know why, but you just were. Anyway, a little more backstory. At the time, I was 15. My brother was 17. My cousin was 17 as well. We all went to the same high school, and Jim knew his way around getting some of the good stuff, like kush or alcohol, whenever we wanted to at the time, but preferably the kush. Anyways, we all lived on a road kinda in suburbia, but a little bit sketchier and a little more run down. There were these woods on our road that were about 2 football fields in length across and 1 deep into the woods that had been there since my family moved in a few years ago. There was a trail out there that people would walk all the time. They'd walk their dogs and shit like that. That year, there were some major winds that had blown and 3 or 4 trees had fallen over and pulled the roots right out of the ground, up with the trunks. No one ever came to clear them out, so they had just always stayed there. So, back to the story. Jim had gotten his hands on some weed, borrowed a pipe from one of his friends, and we were planning to smoke that night. The plan was that me and Rick were going to sneak out of our house at 11 p.m. We weren't too worried about sneaking out and waking up our mom, but we still had to be quiet, sneaking past her room to go down the stairs, out the back door, which I had to oil so it wouldn't squeak when it opened. And then we were going to meet Jim at a telephone pole at 11:15 sharp. We had executed all this perfectly dozens of times before, so we weren't breaking a sweat about getting caught or the smell of weed. And if so, we always had some sort of air freshener that smells like the woods or some shit, so the kush smell would disappear into the woods. "You got the shit?" I asked Jim as we started to walk out into the woods. "Fuck yeah, dude," he said, as he showed us this crazy amount. We'd always had a designated smoke spot in those woods. But for some reason, Rick was like, fuck it. We should try some other place. We all agreed. We don't know why. But thank the heavens we did. The normal spot was smack dab in the middle of the woods. But it was well hidden. It was never found by any animal or human due to the fact that it was surrounded by blackberry bushes and their thorns. We were about 50 feet away from this fort by a little creek river thing that ran through the ditch, right throughout the entire woods. So, there we were, the little ditch river thing, getting high, when headlights flashed in our direction, like someone was turning onto the road. Mind you, we were closer to the entrance than our hangout spot was. So we ducked down thinking that it's a person with a flashlight out to bust our high teenager asses. But in the midst of ducking, and a few of the, get the fuck down, shut the fuck up, and hey, I hear something, we heard a car slowly coming down, but the driver didn't turn the car off. We sat there a few seconds, and we started to hear Adam's Song by Blink-182. We looked at each other and were like, hey, let's fucking go some Blink-182, man. But then Rick said, shut the fuck up. Wait. Being the older brother and having that tougher attitude towards things, he looked over the ditch and motioned his arm for us to look up. So, sketchy red van, and the lights were on. This was the only light anywhere because there was no street lights on our street, so it was evident that this was in the car. What we saw made us all whimper in fear. Two dudes were sitting there that looked maybe in their 30s, that had dropped out of high school and lived on the street for 5 years or so, and they each had huge knives in their hands. We all looked at each other in horror, and even Jim was shitting himself, and he wanted to be a cop when he was older. When we looked back a few seconds later, the two guys in the car were putting masks on. One was Jason's hockey mask from Friday the 13th, and the other guy put on a Freddy Krueger mask from A Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean, these two sick fucks then looked into the back of the van, looked at each other, clinked their knives like they were drinking beers, and then turned the music up. Me, being the youngest, was the most scared. I ducked really fast. This made somewhat of a loud noise, and one of the dudes looked up. He took out a flashlight and scanned the forest line as Rick and Jim slowly ducked as the flashlight passed by them. The fuck was that? The guy with the Jason mask asked aggressively. I don't know. Probably some fucking deer. Man, that shit's common out here, said the other guy. They both seemed to shrug it off as they opened the truck doors, and we could see that these two sick fucks were carrying out a woman in her early 30s, knocked out cold. I mean, still alive, but knocked out. All the while, Blink-182 was playing over all of this. Fuck. 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 Said Rick under his breath as we watched this happening. The part in the song where Hoppus sings the lyric, I never thought I'd die alone, played, and I thought, oh, fucking hell, this is it for me. But I won't die alone. I'll die along with my bros, unlike this person. We watched as they walked down the trail, carrying their knives and this woman. Boss is going to be proud of this one, the guy in the Jason mask said, loud enough for us to hear it. Fuck yeah, dude. Maybe we'll even get paid extra because of what this bitch did, said the other guy. I thought, what? Boss? Paid? What the fuck did this woman do to deserve this? Freddy Mask guy then said, all right, so where are we taking care of the business? I found this kid's fort that I cut through a few days ago. It's the perfect spot to do it, said the guy with the Jason mask. Holy fucking shit, I thought in my head. We could have been out at that fort, but we had chosen to come over here to smoke. We watched those guys carry the woman into our fort, laid her down, and then stopped. Hey, maybe we should check out the rest of the forest, said the Freddy Mask guy. All right, fuck, fine, said the Jason guy. We all looked at each other like, we are so fucked, they're going to spot us easily. I mean, we're only 50 feet away from them, and they have flashlights. But then it hit us. In between the different sections of the river were these tunnels that were just barely enough to maybe let three skinny teenagers in. We all, as quietly as we could, went in swiftly, and we crawled in through the tunnel as far enough as so the guys had passed over the river. Anyone down there, you reckon? Asked the Freddy guy. Nah, said the Jason guy. There must have been some other being out there to tell those guys to not look into the tunnel that late, like maybe Jesus or something. Because they just brushed it off. And we sat in that goddamn tunnel for another 15 minutes until we saw the flashlights disappear again and they were shining towards the fort. We didn't dare move an inch, regardless if we were visible or not. And then we heard, all right, let's do this shit. And another sickening clink of those knives. We all started breathing like it was minus 20 degrees. We were so scared. We heard the two guys each take a stab at the woman with a loud grunt from each. We also heard muffled screaming from the woman, and I actually puked on my shirt. And so did the other guys. These two psychos took a few more stabs each, and eventually the screaming stopped. I mean, meaning they had finished their job. I mean, I couldn't believe this shit. Me and my bros had just witnessed a fucking murder in the woods. In the middle of the night, on a fucking road we had lived on for years. We were all crying our eyes out at that point, but as silently as we could, and breathing like we had just run a 5K. Then we heard the six words in the distance that I can still hear to this very day. "Let's dump her in the river." We jolted a little then, frozen out of pure fear. We heard the crunching of leaves and branches coming our way as we started to duck down even further into the pipe, and then we heard the sickening thud of the woman's body falling into the creek bed. We had our eyes closed during all of this, and then we heard a in a grunting voice, "Boss is going to be proud." And the other guy say, "Hell yeah, he is." After that, we heard the guys walking back to their truck, and we finally opened our eyes to see the woman's lifeless body turned and looking at us. I mean, all of us were whispering aloud in our heads, "What the fuck?" I was too frozen in fear to close my eyes, and not to look at her lifeless body staring at my soul. We heard the truck doors open, then slam, and the tires taking off. As soon as we heard it turn off to our road, we all burst out of there, grabbed our weed, and hauled ass home. We all sprinted to my brother's house through the back, up the stairs, and into our room. We started puking our guts out and weeping as quietly as we possibly could. I mean, we're just teenagers, and we just witnessed a murder on our own fucking street. Jim stayed up with us that night, till morning, and all day, we couldn't fall asleep. That was the last priority. But we couldn't call the cops because we were so high out of our minds and underage, in a place that this was very, very illegal. All we could do was shut the fuck up and stay in the house. Around noon the very next day, still in our room, having not slept a wink, I looked outside and saw some of our neighborhood friends walking towards the woods. And you know what? I'm going to make this short. They found the body of the woman, someone called the cops, and they were all questioned, but they returned having nothing to do with it. We, of course, knew everything about it, but were never questioned because we never brought it up. There was a huge investigation that was launched, and the following months were just cop cars up and down our road every day, so that meant no cush for us anymore. We even saw them carrying out the body on a stretcher through my window. I had to look away, knowing what had happened. Of course, they never found the two guys, and I haven't heard or seen anything about them since. I'm now 37. I'm a pilot. I'm married. I have two children, and I'm writing this story from a hotel in Washington State, and had to get this fucking story out to somebody. I also want to mention that years after the incident, my friend Jim took his own life due to unknown reasons. And I've learned since, don't take life for granted. It's a gift we get to just live. And for all those motherfuckers out there that try to end others' lives, you're sick fucks, and you deserve to rot in hell. Thanks for reading my story, Uncle Josh. Again, huge fan. Thanks. Creepy clicking sound, submitted by Gabriella V. So, I've been a fan of your channel for some time now, and I thought this would be fine sending you this. For some details, I live in Mexico. I'm 11 years old, and I'm a girl. I have two little stepsisters and a cousin living with us. My mom is divorced, so it's a family of five. It's been a year since we moved here to this little town that's in Morelos. My mom was born here, and she has a lot of family here. We moved into a house on the top of a hill, and it was a piece of shit, if you ask me. It had no doors whatsoever, only one to the bathroom. I should mention that in our old house, there was some weird shit going on there, like seeing people in the dark or seeing things move in the corner of your eye. And you always felt you were being watched if you were in the bathroom. My mom always felt a presence in the house and thought that it was evil. And I always had these horrible nightmares. My mom had these experiences when she was with my dad. So when she felt these things again, she was panicking on the inside, but not wanting to scare us. She just told me that we had to get our pastor to bless the house. We're Christian, by the way. And then it would stop, but when we were moving, it started again, so we just decided to get out of there. Nothing really happened for a few months. We celebrated Christmas there. It was December 21st or 22nd. I can't remember the exact date. I was sleeping when I woke up to the sense of dread. And then I heard it. This clicking sound. It sounded like someone was clicking their tongue to get my attention. Shit, I thought as I moved to try to see what was happening. And then there were footsteps. And it went like this. Then it stopped. I felt like crying. And I actually think I did. But then it started that fucking clicking sound again. So I grabbed my headphones and just slept with music on. The next day I told my mom and asked if she had woken up and did that and said, "What? No, why?" Not wanting to freak her out, I said, "Huh. I must have just been hearing things." I just sat there eating my cereal. The next things are a little bit scary to me, but also it was kind of cool in a way. I mean, I am a creepypasta fan and I like scary stories, so I'm kind of amused by these things. But it didn't scare me, not like the one with that clicking thing. So I was doing laundry, and that's my favorite thing to do in the house. In the laundry room, there's this cable that connects the laundry and dryer, and it goes out to the yard and connects to an outlet there. And there's a button that you have to push to turn it on, and I swear on my drawing book, I turned it on, but when I turned on the dryer, it didn't go. When I looked, the button was off. And this had happened to me so many times, I just started to think it was normal. But when my mom does laundry, that never happens. Maybe whatever it is that's doing that is scared of my mom, or maybe just doesn't want me doing laundry. But I think it's also mimicked my mom's voice. Let me explain. I'd be in my room and alone when my mom would go out, and I would stay inside because of the COVID shit that's going on. I would be taking care of my sisters when I would hear, "Sophia!" I would hear it downstairs, and it's a two-story house. I would say, "Oh, Jesus Christ, this woman!" And I would go downstairs, but there wouldn't be anyone there. And my sisters always said they never heard anything. This happened a lot. Sometimes my mom can be kind of toxic. One time I forgot to do the laundry, and I was on my tablet, and she told me that she'd break my hand if I dared to touch it. I wasn't crying because she knows how much I like to draw, but sometimes she would just look at me like this evil look and say that whatever I was doing wasn't a professional job. Of course, I would cry. But when I did, I would feel whatever was in our house as presence, feel comfortable, and then carry on. For whatever reason, I noticed that whatever was in our place liked my drawings and my digital art too, because I would work on something, go to get something else, and then find my drawing crumpled up like someone was flipping the pages. While I was on digital, it would mess around with brushes or go through layers. I also thought it was watching me sleep, because I always felt like someone was watching me, but in a good way. That's all I want to share right now. I'll update it soon, but I hope you read this. And I understand it might have been difficult to read, but I appreciate you doing it. Cemetery Scare, submitted by Kimberly H. So this is the first time I've shared anything like this. I've had a few scary moments over my time, but never shared them. Here's one from my workplace. So, here goes. First, you need a bit of background information. I work in a cemetery. Yep. It was built in the 1800s and has a crematorium standing at the top of a hill. I worked in the main office and dealt with 4 active cemeteries, still in use and currently burying. And there were also 4 closed cemeteries, very old with very vast amounts of land. My office stores all the ashes from cremations and also the belongings of people that the state pays for funerals. The office was part of an old house that used to be a home on the grounds where the diggers and cremators lived back in the day. I'd been working in this part for about 10 months and found out I was 4 months pregnant. I had a son that was 2 and a half at that point, so I was working only part-time, but 2 full days and 1 half-day. Morning only. And this is relevant, trust me. I got to work one morning, and I arrived a little before everyone else, so I made my way to the kitchen to make coffee and make myself comfortable before work. I filled the kettle and tapped it in and left the office quickly to get my coffee. Sidebar, I'm a bit of a coffee lover and have expensive coffee that I keep locked in my desk drawer. So I got my coffee and made my way back to the kitchen, and I passed the urns of ashes shelved up ready to be laid to rest or collected by families. When I walked past them every morning, I always bid them good morning. This particular morning I said, "Good morning," then stopped and said, "You all know I'm pregnant and suffering. I think you should make my morning coffee for me." They smiled and then said softly, "I understand, you don't like the smell." I smiled again. Please don't ask, I do talk to myself a lot. And I think of the ashes as people still. I then really needed to use the toilet, and being pregnant, there was no holding it at that point. So I placed my ground coffee on one of the shelves and said, "Oh boy, nature's calling, just look after this for a moment." And I ran back towards my desk to the door that led to the toilet. When I returned, I grabbed my coffee, thanked the ashes, and continued to the kitchen. I opened the door and saw the kettle had boiled over, and my carafe was placed along with my cup on the glass cutting slate on the counter in front of the kettle. I didn't think anything of it and continued to make my coffee. So I walked back to my desk, again passing the ashes, and said, "Hey, here's to another day," and toasted them all with my coffee, and then got back to my desk. When I sat down, I placed my coffee on the mat I had, and suddenly I heard a massive banging upstairs coming from the permits office. This leads up from the main office where I sit. I presume the crematorium manager had gotten to the office, and for the sake of the story, I'll just call him Jack. So I called up, "Hey, I've just boiled the kettle, Jack, and can chuck a tea together if you like." Jack was an Earl Grey tea type kind of guy. Tea is yucky. Anyway, there was no answer, just a sort of shuffling. So I called again, and nothing. I thought maybe I was just hearing things and went back to my desk. But after a moment, the bang happened again. I was very confused at this point. I just sat there quietly and made sure that I was paying attention to any other noises. Then I heard what sounded like the filing cabinet slamming open and then closing and then opening. So, me being me, bold and outgoing, I thought I'd ask if he needed help and started to stride across my office. I got to the bottom of the stairs and opened the door and shouted up, "Hey Jack, you okay? You need help with something?" The shuffling and slamming stopped abruptly, and I just couldn't work this out. So I walked up the stairs thinking I heard mumbling too. I didn't see anything when I reached the banister top. The office was completely empty. The cabinets were closed, and the chairs were pulled in, and all the computers were off. I said out loud, "This pregnancy is driving me insane. I'm too old for this malarkey." And I started walking down the stairs, and I heard a whisper say, "Nonsense. You're perfect." I turned, and there was nothing. I mean, at this point, I thought I was totally losing my mind. When I got to the bottom of the office stairs that led to my main office, I opened the door and thought, "Man, that was just creepy." Then people started arriving. Jack got there and looked at me as I was probably pale with shock at this point, and he asked if I was okay. He walked over to me with a concerned look, and I told him with a smile what had happened with the noises coming from his office. He smiled and said, "Oh, don't worry, that's Doris. She won't hurt you." I stared at him shocked and asked, "Who is Doris?" Apparently, Doris was a lovely lady who used to work here many, many years ago. He never really knew her, but deduced it was her by the story. So, as I said, this office I worked in was a house placed at the front of the cemetery when it was first built to house groundsmen, or diggers as they were called. Back in the day, the plots were dug to hold 10 to 40 bodies, and this, as you can imagine, was very, very dangerous for diggers and groundsmen, as they could dig and dig and dig, and the ground might collapse around on them. There were known to be many diggers buried alive at one time. But this lady was a wife of a very long-standing digger that had always been very cautious, but eventually, sadly, was given too many new men to guide at one time, and that led to his demise. He was digging a pauper's grave, as it was called back then, for 25 deceased people coming from World War II. As he reached the bottom of this new grave, one of the new young lads misstepped and brought the sides down on the digger, and unfortunately buried them alive. By the time they reached him, he was gone. His wife was making dinner for all the groundsmen at the time in the house lodge. She was told what had happened, that her husband was gone, and she stayed to ensure the lads got their meals whilst digging the grounds further, ready for the returning soldiers of the war. Apparently, a couple of weeks later, she died of a broken heart. All the groundsmen had adored her and ensured that she was buried in the same plot as her husband. From then on, the lads would find food pulled from cupboards and herbs on the counter ready to make a meal. They would hear things moving about upstairs where she had washed all their clothes. They all claimed that this was Doris looking after them, even in her passing. So Jack told me that story and then said, "Honestly, I'll make my way back here every now and then thinking how hungry I am, and I'll get to the office and find my fork pulled from my drawer and placed on my desk where I eat. I'll find tea bags in my cup when I enter in the morning, or if I've had a really bad day, too. She's really good to me. I've never complained." Then he smiled and made his way back to his office. So every morning I entered, and before I left for the day on my full day shifts, I would say hello to Dora separately from the ashes shelves, and then say goodnight when I left. Every morning, I'd get to the kitchen to make my usual coffee, and my cup would be waiting for me. That would really make me smile, and really feel sad at the same time. I mean, sad that she felt compelled to stay after all this time when the groundsman had changed so many times, and so the lodge home she once lived in had changed as well. After a couple of months, I left to have my baby, and upon my leaving the office to take my maternity leave, I did the same thing. I bid good morning, good day to the ashes, and a separate greeting for Doris. Then I said, "I'll be back soon, a fresh mummy, and I would bring in my baby so that she could see her soon." I visited the office and my daughter on a particular day and was not having one of the best. My daughter was grumpy and miserable, and she hadn't had a day like that yet, which was really making me exasperated that I couldn't ease her. So I figured maybe she was just teething. We pulled up at my work. I parked and got her from the car, and then left her in the car seat as I was very exhausted at this point and had no interest in staying long. I ran into the office, said hello to the ashes shelf, and sent a hello to Doris. And that's when I put my daughter's car seat on one of the empty desks so to take her hands and just calm her. She looked up at me, and she smiled. She instantly stopped crying. She had been crying and whining all day, so I let out the loudest "Thank God!" without even thinking. Everyone looked at me smiling, asking how she'd been. I said, "Today, it's been a bad day, but she's such a dream." Sidebar: both of my children were very happy babies, as in content in one world. They were the only babies in the ward, and yes, a little under 3 years apart from the same dad. They never cried. So happy, I just slept. The only time they cried was the first poos and teething, with my daughter having the same sentiment as my son did in the hospital after their initial birth. Again, I figured it was teething. So I grabbed my teething gel and placed a little on her gums while I was saying hi to office colleagues. They were coming over and cooing all over her. One of my close friends, I'll call Sarah for this story, asked to hold her, so I handed her over to her and said, "She's not unhappy, she's just teething. She's okay." Sarah took her and gave her a good rock, and it seemed to soothe her for a moment longer. But Sarah did have work to do, so I took my daughter back and rocked her myself and placed my finger in her mouth to chew on whilst I was talking to everyone catching up on work and life. That's when my daughter stopped chomping on my finger and giggled. Everyone instantly went wild over her and said how beautiful her little giggle was. I thanked everybody, but looked at her while she was just finishing a giggle, and noticed she was actually looking past me toward the ashes on the shelves. So I said without thinking, "Oh, you're meeting my friends, are you?" Everyone shook their heads and rolled their eyes, smiling when my manager came down to say hello, being told I was around. Then I made my way to the kitchen to heat a bit of milk to give my daughter before we went home. He made a coffee while we chatted and said to me out of the blue, "Is this yours?" He held up my Starbucks coffee cup. I said, yeah, do you need me to take it home and bring it back when I return after maternity leave? He looked at me and said, every single morning I came into this kitchen and your cup was on this glass as if waiting for a coffee to be made. Gotta be honest, it freaks me out sometimes. I've even come in to check, and there's nothing out here. I'll fill the kettle. Sure, there's no cups out on the counter, maybe even gone to the bathroom or put stuff by my desk, but when I come back in the kitchen, your cup is always out here. He smiled and shook his head. I just smiled at him as I was leaving the room and said, I think it must be Doris letting you know that I might need a coffee. I winked at him. He tried to laugh, but I could see that this was making him uneasy. When I returned to work, there was a bare place just under my monitor. It was very small and fit into one of my hands, with a pink scarf and had a heart at the bottom of it. It was brown, and I picked it up as everyone was there, and I asked, hey, who left this for me? Everyone looked around at each other, and there were looks around the office. Each and every colleague thought maybe the other one had put it there. By the end of the day, I found out that no one had placed the teddy there. It wasn't covered in mud or wet or anything. It wasn't something that fell from someone's memorial. The groundsman also said that they had no idea how it got there. None of them had placed it. The end of the day came, and eventually everyone left abruptly, and I said I had a couple of emails to finish up and then I was leaving. Having the keys and the alarm code, I was okay, and everyone left me alone. I finished my work and turned to grab everything to leave, spotted the bear in the corner of my eye, and then smiled. I then said out loud whilst picking it up, so who left you for me? And I heard the same soft voice I heard months earlier, just a whisper as if behind my ear. A gift for you, from me. God bless your heart. I turned quickly and saw nothing, and smiled and then said aloud, thank you very much, Doris. I'll give this to my daughter tonight. My daughter cherished that bear until she could run about, and I washed it and placed it in her memory box. It was a magical bear. She would always hold the bear to her face when she felt sad or was teething. She would just rub it gently, and it seemed to soothe her instantly. I really thought I lost my mind a year before hearing those cabinets close and being opened abruptly, and the shuffling around the place was always making me think we had a demon or something. I was so heartwarmed to find I was completely wrong, but also very saddened to know that this lady may never find peace, or her husband in whatever afterlife there may be. I honor Doris every day I work, and I pray she finds the way to her husband one day. But until then, I know she's there, and whenever I take my children to work for some unavoidable reason, my daughter smiles the whole time she's there. The atmosphere is amazing when she's in the room, and it just makes me feel honored that my daughter clearly is happy for the short times that she goes to the office with me. Thanks for the reading of my story. I don't mind if it never makes to one of your videos, but I just wanted to share with you. Jack has left, and let's face it, it makes us all sound a bit nuts when you work for the local council and could be accused of anything and even be looked at by child services. That concept alone stops me sharing this with anyone else. So, at the end of the day, I hope you enjoyed my story. After Work Psychos, submitted by Chad T. For context, I am now a 42-year-old man. I was 19 or 20 years old when this happened. I had just gotten off of work at a Sears Auto Center. I was tired, covered in grease, and all of that good stuff that comes along with working on cars all day. As I left the parking lot, I noticed a big, older model Ford Bronco tailgating me. As I pulled up to the light, I changed lanes to get this guy off my ass. I felt the eyes of these guys gazing at me. I'm not going to lie. I was scared. I didn't want to look at them. They started screaming at me, and I still would not look over. Finally, I was forced to look once they threw a beer bottle at my car. I looked over, and the passenger yelled at me, you cut us off, now we're going to kill you, faggot. I immediately said, no, dude, I didn't cut you off. Stop throwing shit at my car. The light turned green, and I thought they were going to follow me for sure. And I was right. This was in 1998, way before I had a cell phone, so I couldn't call anybody for help, and these guys were as close to me as possible without hitting my bumper. It was about 10 p.m. on a Tuesday night, so there was hardly any traffic on the road. I was terrified. I did, however, have all my softball gear in the car. I pulled my aluminum bat close to me in case I needed it. These guys seriously wanted to hurt me, and I didn't want them to follow me to my house, so I desperately tried to lose them. The truck was huge, and I couldn't outrun them in my 89 Sundance. I wanted to drive to the police station, hoping these guys would just figure out what I was doing and get lost quickly. However, I did have an ounce of weed on me, so I couldn't risk getting arrested, again, for weed. I decided the only thing I could do was call their bluff. If they wanted it, they were going to get it. I could hear them screaming and throwing shit at my car for what seemed to be forever, but it was probably only like 7 minutes. And they kept calling me a fag, and I guess that was their go-to insult. Now, I'm not a huge guy, but I'm not a bitch either. So I clutched my bat tight to my body as I drove, thinking about the best place to stop and get this over with. I pulled into a small cemetery that backed into some woods. The small road loops around the cemetery, one way in, one way out. And they just kept screaming, "We're gonna get you, faggot," and laughing uncontrollably. However, the laughing stopped when I slowed down and came to a stop. Once I put my car in park, I heard the guy in the passenger seat say, "What the fuck?" I knew then that they were scared little bitches. I opened my car and jumped out aggressively. The driver then said, "Oh, fuck this." Since I was blocking this small single-lane road, the only way out for them was to navigate in reverse in their big-ass truck. I mean, they had to reverse slowly so as not to hit anything. I walked them down as they reversed out. And I just said, "Where are you guys going? I thought you were going to kill me." The passenger all of a sudden said with a shaky voice, we thought you were somebody else, sorry." I took my bat and smashed their headlights out of the truck. They were both now screaming in terror, and I'm not sad to say that it gave me a rush. They finally made it out of the cemetery and it was over. The next day I went back to work. And it was about at 11 a.m. I got a work order for a headlight repair on a Ford Bronco. Yep, it's a small world. The event changed my life and how I live it. I've never backed down from anyone, and that moment has molded me into who I am. Hey gang, thanks for listening to this episode of Uncle Josh's True Scary Stories. If you have a true scary story you'd like to hear narrated on my channel, email UncleJoshTrueScaryStories@gmail.com. I read them all. Please like, share, and subscribe to my channel, and make sure that you hit the notification button to find out when I am uploading. Follow me on social media. All the links to that are in the description below. Everyone, be excellent to each other. Wash your hands, wear a mask, social distance. We'll get through this. Until next time. Remember, be wary of things that go bump in the night. It could be anything. A ghost, a monster, or the guy next door. If you're a serious comic book collector, just starting out your collection, or maybe you're just a casual reader, then you have to check out 3D Comics in Lancaster, New York. From graded comics, custom art lithographs, limited edition prints and statues, 3D Comics is a must-see for the serious enthusiast, but the laid-back atmosphere is perfect for anyone with a love for comic books and more. They also specialize in custom art Funko Pops, taking regular Funko Pops and having a team of artists do original art on the boxes. Each comes with a certificate of authenticity. Located at 32 Central Ave in the heart of the village of historic Lancaster, New York, 3D Comics is open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, with special appointments available on Sundays. Find them online at 3dcomicsandmore.com. That's the number 3, the letter D, comicsandmore.com. And if you prefer to shop online, owner Joel Charmani has tons of items available on eBay. Find a quick link to that on the shop's homepage. They also feature in-store appearances from today's hottest artists, special offers, and every Wednesday is New Comic Book Day. Give them a call at 716-860-7837, visit them online right now at 3dcomicsandmore.com, or better yet, just stop on in. But no matter where you are around the round world, 3D Comics is your destination for the best in comic books, custom art, and beyond. 3D Comics and More. That's the number 3, the letter D, comicsandmore.com. Tell them Uncle Josh sent you.
Okay. Why would you say? I don't give a shit if it's not relevant. Then don't fucking say it. All right.